Peter Alcoholic. There's an old Rodney Dangerfield joke. And he says he and his wife decided to cut back on smoking. And he says, we agreed to have one cigarette only after sex. He says, I got the same pack since 1987. She's up to 3 packs a day. I don't know. Good night. It's timing. It's timing. Okay, a couple of things. I just want to, some notes I have here. Just some considerations. Am I in this in a place of compliance or surrender? My actions will determine that. Am I in a place of looking to feel better or get better? My actions will show that. Am I seeking comfort or am I seeking freedom? My actions will show that. My motives will be revealed. And am I in a place of dis-ease, discomfort, or I'm traveling light with ease and comfort? Am I in a place of struggle and resistance or open? Where am I in that? And what lengths am I willing to go to? And sometimes we have, are you willing to go to any lengths? We couple that with, it's going to be bad, it's punitive, it's going to hurt. Well, it might a little. And sometimes any lengths is, would you mind sitting here with someone? No, I'm only. No, I'm, we're a team. We're going to do this tonight. Yeah, would you mind just switching seats? You know, okay, sure. Any lens, and it's just a matter of something like that. The willingness is the key here. The part of us that creates the problem, the part of me, I use me, that creates the problem is not where I'm going to go to solve the problem. Because I got this mind that keeps telling me it's going to fill that little hole in the ground while it keeps digging the hole next to it. So I take the dirt and I throw it in there. It's full. Oh, no, I got one here. So I take it and put it in there. It's full. I go back and forth all day long. And I start to get distracted from what's really important. God is always beyond my cleverest plans. That's why my book says little plans and designs. But God's always beyond my cleverest plans. What happened to me also going through this work, there was a point where, and I don't have any regrets about it, very structured sponsors, very rigid sponsors. And I love all the lessons they gave me. But what I fell into, I talked about earlier, being married to the mechanics. And we can easily get programmed by the program, rather than awakened or transformed. I was doing a talk, it was in Louisiana, and I was a Sunday morning speaker, and that Saturday afternoon they asked, hey, can you do a little 10, 11, 1 hour, a little workshop on television? Sure. And so I got done sharing my 10 and 11 stuff, and a lot of what many of us do with step 11 is it looks like Easton. You know, sitting, breathing, posture, meditating, all that stuff. It's more Eastern influence, I'll say. And this guy had got done, and he had his big book under his arm, and he went from the back of the room up to the podium, and he was after me, and he says, thanks for sharing. I said, you're welcome. And he says, what you said is Eastern philosophy. That's Buddhism. It doesn't belong in AA. And he tried to ream me. He went up one side, down the other on me. And when he got done, I said, thanks for sharing, and pissed him off even more. Sunday morning, I go to speak and give a talk. And when I get done with the talk, here he comes, Mr. AA, from the back of the room. Mr. Restless and Discontented makes his way towards me. And he comes up to me. Thanks for sharing. I said, you're welcome. He says, can you sponsor me? Same guy. What changed? This guy, I tried working, we lasted about 3 months and he disappeared, but he was in mechanics and he knew his mechanics, but he was restless, irritable, and discontented. So I have knowledge of the work, I have information, I know the mechanics, and I become mechanical. And I'm sitting in there judging and critiquing the misquoters of the book or people who aren't in the book. And really, what I have found that this book should open me up to have a conversation with folks. Open me up to agree to disagree. That's not my experience, but if that works for you, I'm not going to change you. Look to change that for you. If you're telling me joy is happy and free because you do A, I'm not going to say, well, you're doing it wrong. I could. Isn't that a way of playing God? But if you come to me and say, Pete, can you help me with this work? Can you sponsor me? Now I'm going to tell you what I did. And I'm going to expect you to follow that. And you may stay with me for 6 months and find a new sponsor. That's cool. It should be easy. It should flow. Rather than getting so rigid with this work, and really I've turned my will and life over to care of me rather than God. We often say we take our will back, like I'm a God bigger than God, like I can take my will back from God. It's one big trick, by the way. God gave us the free will and makes us believe, like these alcoholics with their egos, let's pretend they're giving it back to me and just tap, tap, go on the top of the head. God gave me free will. It's, other than breath or life, it's one of the greatest gifts. It separates us from the animals. Free will, it's a beautiful thing. But I take that, run it into the ground. So we kind of, okay, God, I'm giving you my will back. Like I'm a God bigger than God. God's going to say, okay, I'll take it back. And then we say, then I took my will back from God, like I'm bigger than him to rip it out of his heart. It's all one big deception. What I need to do is just follow God's path, get aligned with God by shutting down this head. When I'm completely out of my mind, I'm doing absolutely wonderful. Now, when we hear somebody's out of their mind, we think they're loony. And we use that to create a picture of John or Mary, they're crazy, they lost their minds. What are you doing? Have you lost your mind? I'm out of my mind. And we know what we're talking about, but the reality is, when we're acting like that, or I'm acting like that, I'm wrapped up in my mind. It has me. I've lost the GPS. I can't see. I can't hear. And my aliveness is now deadened because I'm paying attention to me. I know how this movie ends. Drunk, disorderly, in jail, dead, treatment on a good day. It's one more thing I wanted to share with you. Two more things. I chase a path that I think I'm on. This is Thomas Merton talks about this. The mind tells me I should be doing this. I should be going there. I should have this kind of money. I should have this kind of relationship. And I should all over myself all day long, by the way. But and I'm pursuit of that, yeah? And this mind that I have wants to, if it was possible, to operate outside of God. Because then it could play. You got the little God gate saying, what are you doing? Where are you going? Why are you bothering the newcomer? It's got that gauge. The mind wants to operate outside of that and pursue its old dreams and visions and accomplish what it wants to accomplish outside of God's realm. And Merton says to be unknown, God doesn't know that guy. And to be unknown by God is far too much privacy. It leads to sin and destruction. And the realm of the spirit is broad and inclusive, never exclusive. But the mind, that's not good enough. The mind wants to operate outside of that. And when I think about my drinking days, and I was in that life, if it was possible to operate outside of God, I bet you we all agree with this, we were. Cheating on the girlfriend, cheating on the wife, not coming home, stealing from people, stealing from the boss, lying, cutting up, cheating, stealing. It was what we did. And you had the problem. The parents had the problem. The good wife at home, they were the problem. That's operating outside of God, if we could literally do that. The mind doesn't want to come back in and conform to what God has for us. That's why lots of times when we hear, do God's will, there's almost like a, well, how far, how much, because it's linked with, this is going to be painful, it's punitive. It's suffering. I'm not going to have stuff. I'm doing God's will. Sometimes they're suffering. Sometimes I'm not going to get all those things I want. And sometimes I'm, you know, plowing the field. Rather than just coming in and reap the harvest, I'm the farmer. Sometimes that's just God's work. But if I'm right, this is what I found, if I'm right with God, I'm in line with God, I love the farming and I love giving it away. I couldn't see it any other way. Prior to that, I'm not getting my hands dirty. You do it. And when we think about what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, we have the folks on Monday night, there's a new guy there, and they leave the new guy there because they're going home to watch Monday Night Football. You get a bunch of us, though, when the new guy's there, well, forget the football game, we got a new guy here. And we hang out for an hour after the meeting, usually in the parking lot, talking, going through cigarettes like they're M&Ms, right? Well, that vape guy looks like London outside the parking lot. Yeah. We're hanging out, and we're just talking. Well, we're going to the next meeting, and we're doing all of that. And it's now 10 o'clock. Honey, I'm with a new guy. Be home a little bit. Okay, fine. She trusts we're coming home in an hour. And you get home, and like, oh, the football game's good, but we got soul food. We work with somebody. That's really doing God's will. That wasn't punitive. Because you can't get in the car and leave him there. You can't, not with an awakened soul. There's something in Scripture, it says this. You know, part of turning it over, use some Scripture words, is there's obedience, that I'm agreeing, third step, 4 through 9. And if it says in Scripture, if I'm obedient, if I'm willing and obedient, I will eat the good things of the land. That's what Scripture says. I'm willing and obedient. Now, that sounds like, you know, I'm in some sort of camp, boot camp, and I got to salute and stand when the sergeant's in. No, we're talking about it all. If I'm willing to follow God's will and obedient to that, I mean, I'm willing to be taught. I'm willing to listen to right from wrong, from treated and untreated. Eat the good things of the land, it doesn't literally mean eat. It will mean I will experience all of God's abundance. I won't go hungry anymore in the soul. My work will be better. My relationships will be better. I'm not perfect at any of this, and I make tons of mistakes at all of this, but I can tell you experientially, that's very true. When I could be transparent with my wife and not have the male ego get in the middle of that, when I could be transparent with some friends, not cast my pearls before the world in a general way, what we were like, what happened, what like, no, careful about that. But I can sit down with a couple of buds and say, I'm petrified about this. I'm really nervous about that. I'm really excited about this. And get goofy. And be okay with that. You know why? Because I'm okay with God, which means I'm okay with me, which means I'm okay with you. We may disagree on a lot of things, but I'm really okay. When COVID happened and they shut us down, I can read you all the inventory I wrote on those people who shut us down, but that's a whole nother meeting. But, you know, for me, it was like, I'm going to go to this Monday meeting. I don't like that meeting. I'm going to go to that meeting and that kind of thing. I'm not crazy about this group. I'm going to change groups. And then they take this all away right before the Zoom thing happened. There was a little gap of, what do we do? And suddenly I was looking to go to any meeting anywhere on the planet just to be around you. I don't care if the speaker doesn't cover the topic. I don't really care. Just I need to be around us. You start to see what we have when it's gone. So we make a decision in 3. And the first thing I'm going to start to touch is my misdeeds that put me in a position with life that is painful. My poor judgments that puts me into position with life and others That is painful. And what I'm going to be forced to do here is finally, you know, hold a mirror up to me, because for a long time it was like, it's your fault. Well, okay, I'll take the hit for this. But if you didn't do that, I wouldn't have reacted that way. That's the negotiating one. And the book says we're going to disregard everyone entirely, which means the people on our list that outright wronged us, and we have those folks. The book is clear about that. You're involved in a drive-by shooting. You know, you walk into work, you're a faithful worker, a loyal worker for maybe 10 years, and the boss says, we got to cut back, you're out. Or we got new equipment that you don't know how to operate, we got these young kids coming in, you're out. And you're like, you're kidding me. So things like that happen, but the book says, what are we going to do about this? I have to disregard them entirely. The inventory was mine, not the other man's. This rubber hits the road here. The bar is raised really high. I cannot write that inventory with an ego in place. God's gonna write the inventory, by the way. I mean, we have a pen. I had a pen in my hand and a notepad and a big book. But the pen simply becomes a spiritual translator at this point. God's writing it. To be searching, fearless, and moral, I don't want to go there. I don't want to be that searching. I don't want to be that fearless. And I don't even know what moral is about. And I'm an alcoholic. I'm not going there. I'll cut corners. I'll lie, manipulate, and cheat. I'll just conveniently leave stuff out. How's this going to work? I did a third step prayer. No way, man. We're going in. God's going to take me by the hand and go in that back room or the dark, dingy basement that I was always afraid to go in. And he's, you're coming with me. I'm going down first. I'm going to turn on the lights. I'm going to show you what's here. A lot of it is just boogeymen. There's nothing there. And a lot of it's messy. So you see all this stuff here? This has got to go. That's got to go. This we're going to tweak. I don't know. But he's taking me around. This is what's in the way. And so I make this decision by a third step prayer with the sponsor on her knees holding hands. Got up off the floor. We sat down. It says next, which means now. We launched on a course of vigorous action. Three adjectives describe a moving. Launched like a rocket taking off, vigorous. I go to the gym. I don't lay around. Action, I'm doing something. It doesn't say read the fourth step and analyze it. It's going to go to work. You're going to go into the gym and hit the treadmill. When you're done with the treadmill, I just started CrossFit. My wife, I'm completely out of my mind, right? She's been doing it for about a year and a half. And so I started doing this. It's madness. I love it when I'm done. But from the moment you walk in, the first time I went, it was a 20-minute, 30-minute workout. I said, wow, that was some workout. And she says, that's just a warm-up. It's vigorous. It's action. We're launching. We're jumping. It's nuts-o world. And that's a fourth step. We're doing stuff. Mechanics. But I can't pull this off on my own. So as next, we launched on a course of vigorous action, the first step, which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us never attempted. I've cleaned your house. I've taken your inventory. I never done my own. And so what I had to do was, my sponsor gave me a little prayer to write. It's not in the book. It's just a little centering prayer. And it went, thank you, God, for allowing me to be searching, fearless, and moral. To remind me who's doing that for me. And then I was to pray before I begin to write. And when I'm done writing for that session, I give thanks. So I bookend the writing with the prayer. I shift in, and then I need to shift out. So I wrote this prayer, and I sit quiet, and I pick up the pen, and it says, we went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. See, they don't really care. I mean, she gave it some dignity by putting on a nice notepad or whatever, but they don't care what you write the inventory on. They don't care if you've got highlighters or pens or pencils. They're not interested. They're interested in, what are you putting down? Are you doing it? So we got a notepad, and what we did was we went back to our lives. We listed names, people, and institutions with whom I was angry. So what do I do? Names. The first time through, I went mom, dad, brothers, grandparents, you get it? Schoolmates and little league play, that kind of thing. And I just stopped putting down names, and names were coming to me. I've kind of changed it, because the first time I wrote a whole bunch of names, and now it's like what I've learned, even when I sponsor guys, 50 names, that's it, we're done. After that, it's just redundant now. I'm the common thread through all of it. And when I got done with the names, my sponsor said, put down two more names, put down your name and God. So I made this master list of names. And then I made a list of principles, ideas. Children should be seen and not heard. Real men don't cry. Do the right thing. 90 meetings in 90 days. Don't drink, go to things like that we heard growing up that used to maybe frustrate us. I didn't like them. I hated the phrase when I was growing up. All the men in my family say, do the right thing. I said, what the hell does that mean? It sounded good when you were saying, hey, do the right thing. I don't know what that means. Show me. I put that down. Institutions, IRS, the government, medical, religious community, you know, treatment center business, politics, you know, whatever institution it is. I remember writing down about the religious community, the medical community, because they didn't save my mom. I wrote about institutions. I wrote down the government because I was angry, because I saw, I remember the Vietnam War and what happened to those men and women. They came home. They were treated terribly. I was annoyed about really, like, you know, fire about that. I remember writing about institutions. I put under radical groups. I put under that title, whether they black, white, Hispanic, or had antennas coming out of their hair. There's every, you know, these radical groups that were hurting people. I wrote those down. I was afraid of them, really. Like, what if I'm that part of the country and I see these people coming at me? What do I do? How do they exist? I can't believe it. Gangsters, I put that down as an institution, because I don't like the way what they did to the Italian heritage. I had this stuff written down. As I'm writing, I'm really annoyed about this stuff. Justice shall be served. I got to write it down. And so I had a whole list of things that were just marinating in the pan. And I could not see at that point that when I was around these people or institutions that I was annoyed with or resentful with, how I would act towards it. I'd recoil or go on the attack, if you will. I'd become defiant or rebellious. I was not doing God's work. Those things own me. I wrote about firemen. When I was about 3, 4, or 5 years old, my family lived about maybe 3 or 4 blocks from a fire department, fire station. And when they would roll down in front of our apartment where we lived on the second floor. It was an old neighborhood, and the house would actually, you could feel it shaking. And there was a poster out at the time, I remember seeing as a kid, of this scruffy fireman with a ladder, climbing a ladder against a burning building, holding a little baby. And it was obviously a promotion for these wonderful men who risked their lives, you know, pulling people out of burning buildings. And it was a fireman saving a baby from a burning building. Get it? But what I saw as a little guy, 3, 4, or 5 years old, was this scary-looking man is going to pull me out of my house and set the house on fire. So I would hear them, and I would lay in bed and just, oh, my God, I'm 16 years old hanging out. I think I'm a little gangster hanging out on a street corner. And there was always these false alarms. They would ring the firebox, or somebody set a car on fire. And here comes these firemen. They look like the Terminator. They got these really weird outfits on. They're all big guys, and they'd walk over, and then, you know, and I'd back up a little bit. You know, I don't want to piss any of these guys off. And then I'm writing an inventory, and what comes is, because God's going to give us stuff we don't even know we know. Firemen, they're going to take me away. I was petrified of them, 16 years old. Every time I see the fire truck go by, hit a thing, I just get really tight. Or if I would, you know, see them in the street putting out a fire in a car or going shopping, they pull up and go into the grocery store and get their supplies, I'd stay away from them. I didn't trust them. They're going to hurt me. That's how old that one was. A bondage of self. And so I take this master list, and I create these four columns. The first one is taking name, resentment. Mom, alcoholic, committed suicide. Addict. Dad, gangster, never knew sports. Never had the fireside chat with my dad. Only saw the bad, you know. My brother John went to college, graduated school, went to work on Wall Street, made a lot of money. I spent about 14 seconds in college and decided to go get drunk instead. I mean, just, you know. My brother Anthony goes to Hollywood to be a movie actor, that kind of stuff. Always was babied as a baby, got away with a lot of things. I was the oldest, the firstborn. I paved the way, that kind of, you know, it's ridiculous. And it went on and on and on and on and on and on and on to the bullies in the first grade and things like that. And there it was. We can easily, if I'm not careful, I can easily do AA living in a second column. Every time he asked me to share about what they did to me. And so they push us into this third column, which I get to see how this one person and the resentment I have with them, and they're usually a lot more than one person and more than one resentment, have impacted from 1 to 7 areas of my life. My pride, my personal relationships, my self-esteem, my security, my ambition, my pocketbook, and my sex conduct. One resentment, one person can infiltrate, if not every area, a few of them. Usually 5 out of the 7. Sometimes pocketbook and sex conduct don't go in every one. That's an awful lot of power that person has. And now I'm a little bit in the shade from God. And then I get another resentment. I'm further in the shade. Now I'm dark. Now I'm in a tunnel and I can't see God. When I'm in that place, I drink. That's why resentment's the number one offender. It's the number one manifestation of self showing up. Resentment, pissed off. And what's behind resentment is fear. You know who's behind fear? Me. Driving it. And then rubber hits the road with the fourth column. It says, where were we at fault? Now, I know the book shows 3 columns, but when we flip over, I forget what page it's on. I'm just trying to move here quick because I don't want to run out of time. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Page 67, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? There's my fourth column. And I write down, where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? Where was I self-seeking? Where was I afraid? Next inventory. And I do this with resentments. It really pushes the envelope to say, take a look at where I'm at fault. Because I'm starting to, what happens is I get clouded vision. I'm living out of I'm not even aware of it, but I'm living out of a resentment from 10 years ago. Joe pissed me off 10 years ago, and now I'm in his company, and I still got that thing going on. And he's a wonderful guy, but I remember that time. I haven't even forgiven him yet. I get a bunch of those things, and I'm really, really got this huge wedge between God and I, which means I'm completely blocked from you. I'm going through the motions in life. I'm not really experiencing anything, and I know the world's going to get me. It always has. There's no God in my life. I go to fear inventory. Same thing, I wrote a master list of fears and why I have them. Fear of living, fear of dying, fear of money, fear of no money, fear of being alone, fear of being around people. I did a whole fear inventory. This gentleman who passed on, Joe H. from out here in California, says do the opposite of every fear you wrote. Fear of no money, fear of dying young, fear of being sick, fear of being healthy, fear of having plenty of money, fear of having a long life. I was the common thread through all of it. It's the alcoholic who comes to me and says, I keep meeting these crazy women. They're all crazy. And I say, perhaps they are, but you keep picking them. You're the one involved. I ask myself why I have them. And I take a look at how I set the ball rolling. What I do in the face of fear? Why do I buy into fear? It says fear ought to be classed with stealing. This is an interesting comment. It seems to cause more trouble. Fear classed with stealing. First of all, fear rips me off. I sometimes don't even know I'm in fear, but I'm starting to feel the effects of fear. And stealing is a choice for most of us. You know, when I was using, and my brothers would come home, and one of my brothers in school was a waiter at a wedding hall, and he used to moonlight in a restaurant, and he would come home with tip money from the restaurant and put it on the counter. It's about $5.20s there. He's not going to miss one. My dad would, he always had, before plastic was popular, you know. My dad's still old school. He's not a big, when he was alive, he always had more money than plastic on him. That was his way. And he always had a nice, nice roll. And he would lots of times have this thing in the bedroom you kind of drape your pants over. It's like a little kind of hanger thing. And put your suit on it. And I knew there was money in there. Occasionally, he put his money on his dresser next to his jewelry. But he always had money in his pockets. A few $100s in there, probably more. What's one or two 20s? He won't even know it. It's a choice. Am I going to go in there and take it or not? I would have the little debate that lasted about 2 seconds, and I take it. And I got away with it, and I did it again and again and again. Feeling stealing is a choice, and fear is my choice. I'm going to go with God, now I'm going to listen to me. The evil and corroding thread, the fabric of our existence, was shot through with it. Yeah, it destroys everything. So I got to take a look at my fears, how I try to control and manage fears as well. What do I do in the face of fear? You know why? I'm not trusting, relying upon God to care for me and protect me. I'm not. But it's my fear, which means it's going to win, and I got to do something, but not God, because God's too slow. He's busy with other things, and he's not going to combat this fear the way I want to combat this fear. I want to be Dirty Harry right now, and he's going to be more Dalai Lama with this fear. I don't have time for that. I got to win. And then we get to the part that no one wants to talk about, the sex inventory. And in the inventory, it's real. The book is saying, not telling us how to have sex. The book is not saying how often to have sex. They really don't care. We're looking at conduct, how my conduct hurt other people or put myself in danger. And what it tells me here is, I don't want to screw this up. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. So I made a list of names, and I answered these questions. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Who did I hurt? I got to look around the relationship. I can say, well, I hurt her. But maybe she had children who really took to me, and because of a knucklehead who ruined the relationship, those kids are hurt, or her parents, or her friends. Or my family. So I got to take a look outside the immediate relationship as to who I hurt because of my conduct. You know, when he gets caught cheating on her and they break up, those kids are mangled in that. How come dad left? And they find out, well, dad was a dirtbag and he was running around behind mom's back. That's why they're not together. That's damaging. And I'm writing the inventory and I say, well, I hurt my girlfriend or my wife. No, I hurt the entire family. Now the in-laws and the family don't talk because of me. And it's this ripple effect. Did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness? You know what? She's not giving me enough attention, so if I flirt a little bit, I'll get her attention. If I come home late, she doesn't have leverage on me. I'll be a little rebellious. Anything to get, I'm trying to get what I want here. I'm not adding to a relationship. I'm not contributing. It's all about me again. And hopefully we don't do these things while we're on this sober path. This is looking back. You know, I grew up, and a lot of us can identify with this, I think. As men, it's okay if we run around a little bit. That's what men do, but don't let her do it. Oh, we're getting divorced. We're breaking up. But I'm with the guys, you know. What she don't know won't hurt. I grew up with all of this, and I live like that. Drop the girlfriend off. Honey, I love you. Go meet the guys and go play around a little bit. I had one girlfriend who used to check my mileage on the car. She said, what'd you do last night? I said, I went home. Really? You left here with 100 miles. The car has 3,000 miles on it now. Where'd you go? You know, you start lying. They want to look at that. That's the kind of conduct. And you know, she's drunk. Instead of putting her in a cab, I take her home. The truth will always find me. The same way sin will always get me. I could run around it as much as I want, but at some point I'm circling the drain again. I do not want to ever be the guy on that fourth step. I don't want that guy around, and I don't want to be that guy. I don't want to be the guy on my last fourth step, let alone the first one. I don't want to be that guy. My mind says I can never walk in the sunlight of the Spirit. Yet God has many of us in this room there. My mind tells me this is what the sunlight of the Spirit should look like and feel like and sound like, which means that's not going to be anything like that. Sometimes the sunlight of the Spirit is going over to a homeless person and giving them some money. Whether they use it to drink or drug is none of my business. I'm not God. But what I'm looking at is somebody is God's child and somebody else's child that at one point they were the cutest baby on the block when she had little Johnny or Mary in her arms. For some reason, this person wound up here. God doesn't have favor of one person over another. His heart breaks when he sees his kids like that. I'm supposed to be the instrument, the extension of God, if you will. That's what we are. We're God's hands and feet. Instead of walking by, get a job, or don't touch them, they're dangerous. Well, we're not supposed to put ourselves in harm's way. But what I'm compelled to do is go over. I've done it many times with my wife. One time we rolled down the window. We have a homeless population in Fort Lauderdale. They're by the highways and panhandling. And some look dangerous. You got to be careful. One guy stopped pounding on the hood of my car one night. He was violent. But most of them are just homeless and strung out or alcoholic or mental health issues. And this guy came over to our window and I rolled down the window. Marion says, what's your name? And he stopped. His whole world just came to a stop for a moment. And he said, like, Michael. And she says, I'm married as my husband, Peter. I said, what's going on? I said, you know, man, it's just tough out here. So as I'm talking, I gave him 10 bucks. I didn't say, here's $10, the big me. I just kind of gave him very casual. There was a few God bless yous that exchanged. But what we did, what she really did was gave that person a little bit of dignity for a moment. When I was homeless, a lot of painful things, if anyone here has been homeless, you know what I'm talking about. It's just awful. But one of the things that's very painful is no one sees you anymore. You're no longer visual. I mean, they see you, but they pretend not to. They just walk past you. They walk by you. Storm merchants won't let you in. Don't come in here. That kind of stuff. It's crushing. And in a moment to say, hey, what's your name? And they said, Michael, this is Peter. It changed for a moment. That's living in the world of the Spirit. Get up here and quote the big book for 3 hours. I think I'm in the world of the Spirit. I'm just full of me, maybe. So I write down the sex inventory. And what they tell us to do at the end of the sex inventory is create a sane and sound idea for our future sex life. Make a little prayer. That's what we did. It looked a lot of opposite of my conduct. Not saying good, bad, up, down, left, right. Just let's take a look at conduct here. And am I continuing to do that? Because they give me some very stern warnings in our book. If I continue this conduct and I'm sorry, you know, we'll get a pass if I change. But if I'm not, it says we're quite sure to drink. So if I was a dirtbag out there and I'm coming in here and I'm still a dirtbag and I'm 13-stepping ladies and I'm doing things that don't resemble a spiritual walk, my book guarantees me I'm getting loaded at some point. And it's kind of like, silly analogy, when I was a kid, I used to watch these horror movies, and there was the thing called The Mummy. Remember The Mummy back in the day? And you got the couple running through the forest, She always falls, by the way. You ever notice that? But they're running through the forest, and they're running at a good pace. And this mummy who's walking like this is always right behind them. I can never figure that out. No matter how fast they ran, Lon Chaney was right behind, or Boris Karloff was right behind them. That's my addiction. No matter how fast I'm running, it's over there. And if I slow down, it gets me. So here I am, I'm acting out sexually and I'm behaving appropriately. And if anyone finds out, I'd be mortified. He can't get out. I got a little secret sex life going on, whether it's be running around with women, going to places I shouldn't be going, watching things I shouldn't be looking at, and things like that. It goes on and on and on. As long as it's in this little container, I got the secret life going on. And God forbid it came out, everything stops. What am I going to do about that? God always wins. I can surrender this to God. And lots of times it's a simple surrender. And I share this. So I get done with this inventory, and it talks about our fifth step, which is can be considered a confession, but it goes beyond that because I go to confession. The usual thing is I speak, priest listens. Are you sorry for your sins? And little dialogue, here's my penance, God bless you, boom. What fifth step says, I'm going to talk to a sponsor about my stuff. Not a life story, but my resentments, my fears, my sex conduct, things like that. He or she's going to listen. In this case, he's going to listen. Ask some questions, share some notes, have some conversation. But we're not done. Because when we're done with this process, we're going to extend this by going and look at 6 and 7. And we're going to push it even further by going back to those people and say 9, or most of them, and those institutions. Because the amends is, I've changed, I'm changing, I'll whatever I can do to change this and to repair it. It's a complete different person, complete shift. Fifth step, it says, having made our personal inventory, step 4, what shall we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude and a new relationship with our Creator. We may have a good attitude and a good relationship with God, but we're gonna clean it up a little bit. And perhaps we're brand new, so I need this new relationship. I've been idolizing everything. I've been instead of worshiping God, I've been worshiping the part of me that thinks it's God. Instead of serving AA, I'm looking for AA to serve me. Instead of being a servant to all in need, I'm looking for others to serve me. There's a shift. There's a difference. It says to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects, have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Thank you so much. These are about to be cast out. This is a pretty cool sentence. I sat with the sponsors. Do you see what the book is saying? I see that about to be cast out. He's looking at it again. So I said, Mark, what are you talking about? He says, about to be cast out. He says, if you were in a treatment center, or you were sitting with a therapist, or you were sitting with your personal doctor or your psychiatrist and said, hey, here's all my stuff, cast them out, they double your medication. We're about here to sit in the fifth step with an understanding God's about to cast out. In other words, get like the fist of Gulliver reaching down and pulling out all the poison. It's a very powerful statement. They're about to be cast out, so hold on. All the stuff that's been in the way is about to be removed. In God's way, in God's time, as much as he wants, but it's about to go. And that can be very unsettling. How do I operate without this defect? When I was brought up, I was taught, don't trust anyone. Don't trust men and never trust a woman. The only thing you trust is the money in your pocket. I was told that over and over and over again by people who love me. Don't trust anyone. Keep your mouth shut and never trust a woman. The only thing you trust is the money in your pocket. Now I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. And they talk about trust God, clean house, help others. You got to trust the sponsor. You trust the process. Trust God. It sounds good, but not too much. I'm going to let go a little bit. I'm not letting go absolutely because I know I'm going to get hurt. I'll be deemed a weakling and a coward. Someone's going to come after me. I'm going to get hurt. I'm leaving myself wide open. I like having a little wall. That was a tough one to let go of. And it dictates the pattern of my life, the course of my life. A lot of us have stuff like that. And we're about to get down to causes and conditions and see what's in the way, what's blocking me. Things I'm completely unaware of, but I experience the effects of them, yeah? And what great love that God has for us to get another drunk, not a doctor, a psychiatrist, or a priest, although we can sit with those people, but it's usually another drunk hearing another drunk on a life and death errand. This is what blows my mind. He should realize we're engaged upon a life and death errand. And who am I trusting that with? A drunk who ripped up their life and got sober. Not someone with 8 letters in front of their name who's on the board of medical directors at some fancy hospital. Some Joda drunk at the home group who's got 20 years. I'm going to entrust my life to him in his fifth step. I mean, doesn't make any sense. Alcoholics Anonymous makes absolutely no sense. The whole spiritual walk doesn't make sense to a mind. It says if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. The old timer said you either do a fifth or drink one. If this is a life and death errand. If I don't do it, I'm going to drink. Back to step one. I don't want to drink. I don't want the pain. Okay, I'm going to keep moving. The chop would carry water. I'm doing it. My hands are tired. They're calloused. I'm sweating. I'm exhausted, but I'm going to keep plowing here because the alternative is to drink and die. I'm starting to like the effects produced by sobriety too here. I'm not looking over my shoulder a lot. I'm sleeping a lot better. People say hello when I walk into a room. I'm not getting the breath test for my loved ones either. They're not getting the eye test when I walk in the house. I've shown up for work every day. In fact, I got paid last week, and I still got last week's money on me. My bank account seems to have another, every month there's an extra $100 that got there somehow, some way. My bills aren't in arrear anymore. I'm on time. In fact, I insist on paying my bills as soon as they land in the mail. And last week after home group, I was in the parking lot with my sponsor and that new guy till 11 o'clock at night, and I didn't regret one minute of it. And I missed the whole football game. Something's going on. I like this. And so I sit down with the sponsor, and we do this fifth step. Every time I sat with a sponsor to do my to give, I wish they called in sick because I'm still uncomfortable. It's not, I'll do a fifth step, I'll tell my sponsor all this stuff, and he'll give me some feedback, it's going to be great. It's like, I can feel the butterflies. I'm a little uncomfortable. It's a crushing blow to the ego once again. The ego's kind of worked out a little bit. It's not glaring, it's not running the show, but it's kind of feeling itself a little bit. And the fifth step, it knocks it right out again. And the part of me that's nervous is the ego, because it knows it's about to die. That's what's getting uncomfortable. I'm going to sit down and talk to you about some of my misdeeds here, my resentments about people you thought I loved. I had an inventory I shared with someone last week. We call them 10 steps. And the person I'm sharing with knows this person. And from outward appearances, it looks like me and this person are good friends. It's not violent, it's not bad. But this person has a way of being really irritating and saying things that are inappropriate. And you're like, you gotta take it down a notch. and he was renting some space. And so I prayed and wrote out some inventory. And I called my sponsor about it, and he said, I want you to call, we'll call this guy Bill. He's called Bill. He says, you need to share this with him as well. And I call up this buddy of mine, and I says, I have inventory for you. We both know who this person is. He says, who is it? I just listened to the inventory. And I got, I just used a different name, and he says, you're talking about, I says, yeah. But I had to read that, and it was just, I don't want you to think less of me because I have this resentment towards this person for being such a knucklehead. But I read it to the sponsor, and I read it to this guy, and they came from the same angle with the feedback, and it was like, forgive them, change me. It was a spirit of forgiveness, and I realized, my praying to forgive someone, I got to be careful because I could be praying, God, let me forgive Joe. Well, really, my motive is, look, I'm praying for forgiveness, but change Joe? No. Forgive them, change me. So we like to pray before we do a fifth step. Get some meditation. Every one of my sponsors has a notepad and pen out, because they tend to take notes while I'm reading, and I do that with the men I sponsor. I pray before they come to me with the fifth step to get centered, this life and death errand, this serious business, and if while they're talking, I might be inspired to take some notes on something they're saying so I can come back to and say, hey, look, we've been talking about this from day one. It's the same thing going on. Can you see this? Share with them some personal experiences. Be open. Let them trust, bring a spirit of trust in there. They feel safe enough to reveal. Mark used to say, what's the worst thing you want to, on this thing that you don't want to read? Let's do that first and get it out of the way. It was always a sex inventory. Let's get that thing out of here. I'll show you what I did, and then the rest of this will be a cakewalk. Where I want to go to is here. For the sake of time, on page 75. It says, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Now we go in. We're going in. When we come out, whether it's one session, a few hours, or a couple of sessions, my attention span for one of these things, I can get near 3 hours and I'm done. Usually 2 hours. And then I start to go ADD. I think I paint the house, you know. I start to lose, and I got to stop. I can't do that to that person. So we'll shut it down. We'll close with a prayer and say, you come back tomorrow. I got a guy right now. This Tuesday, I finish up. We started last week, and I start to get that where I'm losing focus. I'm getting exhausted. So we shut it down. And I told him that from the get-go. I had some notes I shared with him, and he says, this Tuesday, we'll kick it off again. So I'll be jet-lagged as hell on Tuesday night while I'm here in this guy's fifth step. Okay. So we come out and it says this. Once having taken this step, withholding nothing, take a statement, flip it into a question. Have I held on to anything? To take it to the grave stuff? Here's our fifth step promises. We're delighted. We can look the world in the eye. I'm no longer looking at my shoes. By the way, this stuff may not happen right after the fifth step. This might happen. A lot of this happened to me in 6 and 7, even further doing like an 8-step list. This shift started to happen. So if you do a fifth step and this doesn't blast upon you, you're okay. I could be alone at perfect peace and ease. The first time I experienced this after my fifth step, I was watching, it was a Nick game, and we didn't have cell phones at the time, so it was easy to be distracted. But I remember I was excited to watch this. It was a Saturday matinee game from Madison Square Garden. It was a lot of fun. And I watched the entire game. Halftime, I had a little snack, and the game was over. And I realized I didn't go to the phone once. I didn't go outside and see what's happening outside. I just watched the whole game and enjoyed it all alone. Now, for a lot of folks, that's, so what's the big deal? But for me, it was a huge deal because I realized that, oh, my God, I just I was alone. I wasn't jittery. I wasn't uncomfortable. I wasn't bored. I was really into this game. What a great time. That was big for me. Walking into a store to go shopping alone was okay. I was living in Hastings, Minnesota, and winter hit, and my dad sent me some money to get a winter coat. And there was a men's clothing store about a mile or two down this main strip and boulevard in Hastings, Minnesota. And I walked it. You know, there was no public transportation. I remember you got in the car and you went. I walked. It was freezing out, and I get to the store, and I got some cash on me. My dad sent me. I have to get a coat. And I walk in. The salesman says, "Hi, how are you? How can I help you?" And I says, I'm just looking. And I'm walking around. I'm going, they know I'm in the halfway house. They know I don't know what I'm looking for. I don't even know my size. I don't know what, and the clothes became a blur. Thank you, and I walked out. The guy just looked at me. I walked out and walked back. When I got back to the halfway house, there was a guy, Eddie T, who was like a big brother to me. He's, how'd you make out? You didn't buy anything. And I got a little emotional. He said, what happened? I said, I was afraid to go in there. I didn't know what to do. So we went into Sharon's office. Sharon was my counselor. She was a good old drunk who happened to be one of the facilitators there. And we sat down. She says, what were you afraid of? I was looking like an idiot. She says, do you think you're an idiot? I said, sometimes you're not an idiot. When was the last time you went shopping for yourself? I says, probably never. How long are you sober now? 60 days? That's a big order. How about getting some support? So, the next day, the druggy buggy drives up with 15 guys and me. The poor store owner thought it was a stick-up. Because you know how we are when we knew most of the guys were from New York. So they look like criminals. And we all walk in. The guy says, can I help you? And he said, I remember you. And my friend Eddie says, this is my buddy. He needs a winter coat. We're not sure what size. Sounds ridiculous. But this is the steps I took. And the guy says, yeah, what are you looking for? Three-quarter, full length, you know. I said, I kind of like about here. And let's get your size. And he took my, there's a hook in this story that I didn't know. And he was really cool. He's, how are you guys doing over there? And we're doing good, you know, day at a time and blah, blah, blah. And he gives me the size. I don't know what it was. And he said, how about this one? And it was a really nice looking one. He said, what are you looking to spend? I said, my old man sent me this much money. So oh, you're way under that. There's a little sale going on. And he put, you know, they put it in that nice little coat thing, you know. And I got back in the van. I had a coat. And I called my old man. I said, hey, I just bought a jacket and good like this. That salesman was one of us. I never knew it. Sharon says he was one of us. Well, he is one of us. He was part of her home group. I didn't know that. So when he saw me walk in and walk out, he probably said, I know exactly what's going on with this guy. That's when I showed up the next day. He's, hey, I remember you. He was very embracing. He says, a new guy, petrified. I was afraid to shop. But I'm not anymore. Because I can be okay in my own skin. Not perfect. Some days I'm not okay in my own skin. I look at my age, there's a lot more wrinkles, more gray hair, and I got this thing that just keeps, I don't know what that's about. I go to CrossFit and I can't find abs. I don't know where they went. I left them in high school somewhere. I don't know. But I could be alone at perfect peace and ease. That's an incredible statement. It goes on to say this. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. It might be the infancy of one, but it's happening. The engine is running. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. This is a very incredible promise because I would hear someone think about a drink if you're an alcoholic. Well, that's an entirely true statement if I'm untreated. But it says the feeling of drink problems disappear will come strongly. In step 10, it said the problem's been removed. This is on a spiritual walk. I'm not even thinking about drinking right now. oh my God, I got 6 months. I haven't thought about a drink. I got 1 year. I don't think about drinking. I can't remember the last time I thought about drinking. I've been to football games. I've been to baseball games. I watch them on TV. I've gone to parties. I've gone to bar mitzvahs and christenings and weddings. And there's liquor around me, and I'm not leaping over the table. I'm in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, oneness with God. Comes a point on this path where I start to realize who I'm praying to. I'm not treating God like a person and people like God. That I'm praying to the boss. And he keeps feeding me a day at a time. He keeps feeding me dignity and self-respect and respect for other people. Compassion for other people. Prior to this work, I wanted, I had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but I couldn't live up to them even though I tried. No matter how much I tried, I fall short. How are we doing on time here? We're good. Huh? Okay, I got a quarter after, huh? 5 more minutes? Okay. Don't you go to meetings, it's over. Okay, so we'll just close this up. The only time in the book it gives me a time to do something, amount of time is right here. It says, returning home, we're quiet for 1 hour. That doesn't mean the cell phone's on or we're near it, the TV, computer, laptop, earbuds, quiet. Now that can be uncomfortable and unsettling for some folks. I'm really quiet, I'm all alone. But in that quiet time, it's very fertile ground coming out of step 5. And sometimes we'll review the first 5 proposals. Have I been thorough here? And sometimes I'll innocently say, oh, wow, I just thought of something I forgot about. And call a sponsor. And sometimes say that thing I didn't want to tell my sponsor about, I got to call him and tell him. We don't know. I thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know him, but a little prayer. And I go quiet. Go quiet, reflective. A little contemplate, looking back, some meditation, 1 hour's up. And I've had some experiences with that in that hour. One was pivotal. Mark always used to talk to us about daily dying for successfully and the death of self. He used to always talk about that. To be current, self has to die. Intuitive thinking comes from being current, so the self can't be there, things like that. I'm in this hour quiet time, and I start to think, well, who's this God? Oh my God, what I've done, where am I going? And I'm getting really uncomfortable. And I don't ever, ever want to be that guy again, but I'm petrified of what God's about to turn me into, so I'm just really uncomfortable. I start to feel physically uncomfortable, to the point where I break the hour and I go to the phone and I call up Mark. He says, Mark, I feel like I'm imploding. I don't know what's going on. I'm in this hour of quiet time. I'm questioning everything. A lot of remorse and guilt. I'm embarrassed. Oh, my God, I feel like I'm dying. And he says, and I quote, it sounds to me like you're having an experience, and hung up the phone. Now I go back to the hour. Well, he called me later. And he says, Money, how long have I been talking about the death of self for successful living? Is it possible that's what was happening to you? God was pulling back a big layer of you and you felt uncomfortable and questioning, why am I doing this? I couldn't plan that. It just happened. That weekend, my ex-wife was out from Thursday and came home Sunday in the same clothes, tore up from the floor up, drunk and coked up. And when she walked in the house, this is after this personal experience with this work, when she walked in the house, prior to that I would say, why is she doing this? Why didn't she stop? I had a lot of Al-Anon issues. And when she walked in the house that day, I looked at her different. I was brokenhearted. I knew the marriage was now officially over. But when I looked at her, I says, this is what we do. We ruin everything. And there was a part of me saying, she can't even stop this. It's pathetic. I got to get out of here. This is bad. The marriage, everything is gone. But this is what we do, and she can't even stop it. Now, any other day, the male ego had to make a stand here. I got to bark a little, draw a line in the sand, get a little John Wayne right now so I can go out with some dignity. That didn't exist. It was pity. I walked away from the marriage. I had to. It was gone. It was gone beyond repairable. This was like the umpteenth time this has happened. And when I called Mark about it, he says, you see what has happened as the result of this work. God gave you a different point of view on everything. You were leading with the soul rather than this thing that may have gotten really ugly. And you walked out like a gentleman. Yeah. When we come back, we'll talk about 6 and 7. We'll go to lunch.
We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in other speaker tapes or CDs from AA or Al-Anon, please contact us at Sound Solutions, toll free 1-877-893-2777, or visit us on the web at soundsolutionsrecording.com. We are also available to cover your recording and sound system needs. Thank you for allowing us to be of service and carrying the message.